On the Business of Family Business, we tell stories of family businesses across the St. Louis region. And this weekend, we're going to look back at some of those stories and how those stories worked out for the family businesses after the rougher earlier years. We're going to hear stories from KAI Design and Build, SSE, also Butler Supply, Brentwood Travel, A.E. Schmidt, Schaefer Marketing Group, Cone Partnership, Cordy Company, and Lodging Hospitality Management. I'm your host, Ryan Recker, and this show is presented by CMA Consulting. And if you like any of the stories this weekend, you can always go back and listen to the full episodes at kmox.com/ona. Welcome to the Business of Family Business. Dan Bean from CMA Consulting, we find about different family businesses start under different circumstances. If you're Generation One, it seems like it's always a struggle to get that business off the ground at first.
It is never easy to start a new business. Entrepreneurs don't take no for an answer, and they don't give up. They have a high degree of persistence. It takes about 5 years for a new business to learn its connection and fit with the marketplace. And there's a lot of false starts or take two steps this way, turn around and go another way, or course correction. So it takes about 5 years to learn your connection and fit in the marketplace. And during all of that, the entrepreneur, the business owner has to keep going, can't take no, and there's nothing possible but success.
KAI Design and Build starts the show, and we'll talk with Mike Kennedy Sr. and Mike Kennedy Jr. about that early year that could have set them off the edge.
It started in 1980, mm-hmm. Officially. I was reasonably employed at the time, and of course I had, like everyone else, I think I had a vision of what would it be like to have my own business? Mm-hmm. But I wasn't intending to start one. I got involved in a real estate development of two old World's Fair gravestones in the Central West End mm-hmm. in 1979. And by 80, I couldn't get it all done unless I quit my job. So I quit my job. And if mm-hmm. you remember 1980, the prime rate was 22%. So I'm out of a job and can't get financed and wouldn't want to do it if I could mm-hmm. at that rate. So we were sitting on our hands and my wife suggested, you should go look for some architecture to do. It might be a good idea. And that became what we did. It wasn't intentional.
How supportive was your wife through this whole process?
100%.
Yeah.
100%. As a matter of fact, she said to me, if you don't do this, you'll always ask yourself if you should have, mm-hmm. maybe you should have. You don't want to have that. Go do it. And yeah. We only had $2,000 to our name. Mm-hmm. We had choices. Yeah. Pay off some of our debt or roll the dice.
How did you get started then?
I started in the basement of my house.
Yeah.
Okay. And that was the problem. We owed money to our parents on the down payment for our house. We were anxious to pay it. I'd been working overtime to come up with something to give them back. But here we were now in the basement of the house. And I can remember I had a spreadsheet for how I was going to live. I did spreadsheets for how to develop the real estate. Mm-hmm. And, you know, today they're called Excel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Back then, had no name for it, but it's the same format. Little cells filled with numbers and a hand calculator. Mm-hmm. We went on. At that time, in that spreadsheet for forecasting how long we could survive on mm-hmm. the little bit of income that we had between the two of us. Mm-hmm. And it came out that on the spreadsheet that we would be fine until September the 1st. But in August, we were going to run out of money. Mm-hmm. And I called it the cliff. Mm-hmm. I said, well, from March, August, we're going to be coming to the cliff. Mm-hmm. And then we're going to go over the end of the cliff and
So you had at least a vision. You knew you something had to happen in that
time. Yeah, well, it didn't. And my wife had said, go find some work and put together some business cards and a portfolio and drove up to Jefferson City, called on the State Division of Design and Construction. That would have been in April or May. Mm-hmm. Can't remember for sure now. Came back, sat around all summer waiting for something to happen in the financial marketplace, mm-hmm. working on things that I could. But it was August 27th when I decided to call up there and see if those people or doing anything because the cliff was just a few days away.
Yeah.
And when I placed that call, the guy that answered the phone said, amazing that you called. I have a contract on my desk with your name on it.
Hmm. How about that?
We did business for the state of Missouri from that day for the next 20 years.
Wow.
Well, that's because you're still doing it. I mean, yeah, I'm not.
Yeah. You mentioned just some faith. You see something like that as an act of God, setting that up just at the
man,
right time.
Well, I don't know. Maybe you've got a better excuse, but I can't come up with one.
Yeah, no kidding. Mm-hmm. So something
that's right to the edge of the cliff, isn't it?
Thanks to Mike Kennedy Sr. and Mike Kennedy Jr. from KAI Design and Build. Next, we'll talk to SSE, Elizabeth Niedringhaus, and also Susan Elliott, talking about the early years of what it was like to be a woman in a predominantly male computer industry. Mm-hmm. When you created your own business in 1966, what was your vision for SSE?
Well, and in terms of setting the title of the company, you wouldn't put a woman's name in any company name at that point. So my original job at IBM was a systems service representative. Mm-hmm. So we picked that system service for my SS and my last initial E. We picked enterprises because we said that means we could be anything we want to do when mm-hmm. when we grow up.
Were you competing with IBM at the time?
No, I was doing work for them and with them. Mm-hmm. I have a kind of a cute story. IBM would have dinner for their employees and spouses at least once a year, if not twice a year. Mm-hmm. And so when my husband and I would be going into the dinner, then the men were with their spouses. They literally walked right past me and would not speak to me because they didn't want their wives to know that they worked with a woman.
Wow. That detail slipped a little bit there. Yeah. But at the time, I mean, times were a lot different now than it was in 1966. Mm-hmm. And just to, like you mentioned, you had to incorporate in order to get this off the ground.
To have a job.
Because you're a woman. Mm-hmm. And everything you had to do to set that up, did it feel like you were at a disadvantage in 1966, or were you able to overcome all these obstacles and it didn't feel that way?
I guess because of the nature of who I am, I did overcome. They didn't seem to be obstacles to me. And I remember talking with other women who were always complaining about, oh, I'm a woman and I can't get a loan and blah, blah, blah. And I used to say, this doesn't make any difference. Just do what you can do, the best that you can do, and it doesn't make any difference whether you're a man or a woman. That was the best advice that I could give to other women who were coming up.
What were some of the most difficult changes in your industry over the years that you had to overcome and adapt to?
Well, I don't remember anything being difficult. It was just in technology, my favorite expression is, there's nothing as constant as change. Mm-hmm. And when you had techies working for you, they were always playing with the technology and doing the next new thing.
And Susan, you brought your daughter Elizabeth in today.
Yes, indeed.
Yes. Let me ask you this, Elizabeth. How much of your mother's story did you know growing up?
Well, I became very aware of the business when it started to exist in the basement of our house.
Yeah.
And that was, I finally remember having to call down the clothes chute to get her out, come out of the office to have dinner because she'd be working away down there. So that was our intercom in the house, was yelling,
the clothes chute. Kid didn't like the clothes chute, though? I mean, that was a great mode of, you know, communication.
Oh, yeah. And lots of other fun mystery you could have. When I grew up, so in the younger years, she was freelancing and doing a lot of volunteer work. Mm-hmm. So I don't really think that until I went into the business did I really fully appreciate what she had done. Mm-hmm. Because to me then, when she was volunteering, she was doing a lot of things that other moms mm-hmm. were just doing.
Can I just tell you one more story that I just love?
Yeah.
My two daughters, I always had let them be extremely independent. Mm-hmm.
They came in. We might have been raised by wolves at one point.
Let themselves in the door, and I learned much later that they were latchkey kids, and I had not known that expression. And so there was one day when Elizabeth was dancing on her bike, mm-hmm. and she fell and broke her arm, and she was 13, and our daughter Catherine was 16. And I said, well, this is perfect. Your sister just got her license. She can take you to the doctor. And there they were. They had to re-break her arm, put a cast on it, 13 yeah. and 16.
Yeah.
But they managed it. It worked.
That was Elizabeth Niedringhaus and Susan Elliott from SSE. And I want to thank all of our guests that joined us this past year on The Business of Family Business, including Dan Bean from CMA Consulting. Joining us in the next segment will be Butler Supply, Brentwood Travel, and A.E. Schmidt. This is The Business of Family Business. I'm your host, Ryan Recker. In many ways, family businesses are like other businesses. In those early years, they struggle. Some are able to last, some are not. You may be surprised to find out 2/3 of family businesses do not make the generational transition, meaning when it's time for a family business owner to step down, some family businesses are able to identify and develop a successor. Some aren't. Some are actively trying to work it out. Some can't. And that's where CMA Consulting can help. They have the ability to help your family with effective family business ownership and support and unity into the next generation. They want to make sure you have the best possibility of a successful generational transition. And who better than CMA Consulting, with all of their years of experience and all of their success stories? Reach out to Dan Bean from CMA Consulting. Their phone number is 314-721-1860. Their website, cmaconsult.com. Experience it for yourself. cmaconsult.com. Welcome back to The Business of Family Business, weekends on KMOX. And if there's any story you like and would like to listen to the entire episode, it's at KMOX.com in the podcast section. And we're always looking for great new family businesses to interview on this program. Reach out to Dan Bean. He's at CMA Consulting, their website, cmaconsult.com. Joining us this segment is Butler Supply, Brentwood Travel, and A.E. Schmidt. Dan Bean from CMA Consulting, you find that family businesses sometimes have internal struggles, but there's also these external things they can't control. There could be downticks in certain markets or in the country, and that could really change the way a family business operates.
So these kind of critical events, these defining moments, they shape identity and they cause a family business to pivot. Mm-hmm. And so, like for that new business in particular, they're going to pivot several times during those first years. But even as the business grows and it gets older, it's still going to have times where it has to pivot. And that pivot may be 2 or 3 degrees. And every once in a while, that pivot's going to be an 80 or 90 degree correction.
The theme to this episode, looking at the early years of what it was like to start the business and sometimes the struggles associated with it. First, we learn about the early years of Butler Supply with Bill Kempel.
So, was that a difficult company to start during the war? Was there any rations that would have prevented them from doing what they need to do?
Yeah, I think they had some, you know, on products and that kind of thing. I think he had some limitations on what he could get and buy because of the rations that were going on. So they were only given so much metal, those kind of things, to build electrical products with. So there was some things that were tight to get back then. A tough time to start a business.
Yeah, no kidding. But he did.
Yeah.
Was your grandmother involved too?
No. She was not at all involved. No.
Do you remember anything about those years? Like, were they still working when you could remember them? Or at that point, was it already transitioned and someone else was running the company?
Oh, no. I remember my grandfather, you know, very well. I spent, like, hours at the office, you know, sitting on his desk.
Yeah.
You know, doodling and everything. No, I remember that quite well. So
he involved you. He brought you in, and you were there in the atmosphere of it all.
I was there in the atmosphere, yes.
What did you think about it all?
You know, I don't really think I thought a whole lot back then. You know, I just knew it's where my dad worked and where my grandpa worked, and I liked being there.
Thanks to Bill Kempel in his story with Butler Supply. We're also here from Brentwood Travel and what it was like in the travel industry after 9/11. Stephanie Turner and Stacey Acree joined us in studio.
I understand your office in Creve Coeur, you moved in right before September 11th, which was something that probably was difficult for the travel agency. Like even on September 11th, I remember although the planes were grounded, people were a little hesitant. They were unsure of what was going to happen next. And that was probably a difficult time in the travel agency industry.
We actually signed our lease on September 9th, 2001. My landlord, who was a friend and also had been with us out in Chesterfield in a location nearby, was in Las Vegas. And on September 12th, I called him and I said, I can't go through with this deal. The world, as I knew it, changed forever yesterday. And he said, don't be hasty. He said, get me out of here. And of course, it took a few days to get him home. I was actually supposed to go on a trip on September 11th.
Oh, wow.
And I was in such denial that I came to the office with my suitcase. But he came home and we talked for about a month. And he said, you need to do this. You need to look forward. It's not going to be over forever. And he was a good salesman. And he talked me into coming and moving in. So we actually moved in December. And it was with great trepidation that I did it. I don't know if it was the smartest thing at the time, but we went ahead with it. And we just knew we had to be committed to growing. And we went through a couple of tough years after that because people were not traveling in the same way. And I would say that travel, even 2-3 years later, was down 20% from what it had been. And the economy was down in 2003. I don't know if you remember, but the market was down and it was a tough time.
Yeah, well, they're talking about funding war and all of these other things that were going into it, so that did hurt the markets. Of course, people already had trips pre-planned. Were people calling you up and thinking like, man, now I don't want to travel? Was there fear around that time?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I had two couples that had planned a trip with me at our cruise show in January, which is going to be, it's the third weekend in January every year. And one of the couples called me and said, I don't think we can do this trip. So they were very close to the time of the trip and they were going to be in penalty. And I said, you should go. You're going to be fine. The skies are probably safer now than they've ever been. And I had to talk like a bandit too. And they did go and they did have an amazing time. And they not only were clients that I met at my show, but they became friends because they were so happy that I encouraged them to go and they had such a wonderful trip. But yes, people were very nervous. Yeah. In fact, sometimes I felt like I had a paper bag and there was a hole in the bottom of it and all the money that I was putting in the paper bag was coming out the bottom and floating off into nowhere.
A big thank you to Stephanie Turner and Stacey Acree with their story from Brentwood Travel. Next, Kurt Schmidt with A.E. Schmidt. What happens after the market drops?
What are some of those more difficult times in the billiard industry that you guys had to be resilient and be able to move past?
I've probably seen four transitions when I was involved. I got involved, not making a political statement here at all, I got involved pretty much full time during the Carter years. And that was when interest rates went up to about 20%. Nothing says buy a pool table like doubling your mortgage each month. And, you know, so it got very hard to sell anything. In fact, I remember robbing our soda machine to get money out for a COD one time through that. Sure. So, yeah, that was a bad time. And believe me, you know, all of us grieved during 9/11 for the right reasons. But 9/11, nobody wanted to feel good. And that meant pool tables were totally out of the question. So 2001 was a terrible year, both for this country and financial for people like me. You know, the interest was just not there. I remember people canceling orders right and left after 9/11 because they just didn't feel like celebrating anything or having anything fun to do. Bad period of time. Like I said, all the way around. I don't want that to be misconstrued that I was just thinking about money during that time. We all grieved with it.
Sure.
And of course, you know, the period of time where the banking crisis hit and this is a number that you might find amazing. In 2004, there was 350,000 slate pool tables built that year. By 2007, after the banking crisis, that dropped to 75,000.
Oh, wow. That's a huge drop.
That's a huge drop. And when I talked about the five companies that are left, a big chunk of them went during that. They just could not survive.
Wow.
You know, so that was, you know, pretty much disastrous until about 2011, until we started pulling out of it.
Mm.
And, you know, a family business that's done this, we can kind of sense when this is coming. We're really good economic barometers because the first thing that people stop buying in a bad economic time is a pool table. Mm. You know, so...
What would you credit for being one of the companies that lasted as opposed to some that couldn't weather that storm?
Oh, I think we love the business. I mean, you know, it's I see it in my three kids. I see it in my wife. I certainly saw it in my dad. I saw it in my brothers and sisters. Everybody is proud of the company. Everybody is part of our identity. And I don't think, you know, here you'll say great father and again, Kurt, but none of them want to be the generation to see this get dirt shoveled over it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they want to see it survive. It's a fun business to operate on most days, unless telephone solicitors are calling.
Another thank you to Kurt Schmidt, who joined us from A.E. Schmidt on the Business of Family Business weekends on KMOX. I'm your host, Ryan Recker. Dan Bean from CMA Consulting joins us in studio next. We hear stories from the Cone Partnership and Cordy Company on KMOX. We love to tell the stories of family businesses, and that's what we do here on this program, The Business of Family Business. I'm your host, Ryan Recker, with Dan Bean from CMA Consulting. And what we're looking at this weekend are some of those different hardships that businesses may have found in the early years or ongoing years of the company. And sometimes we even want to find out about that secret to success and what happens there. This segment, we're going to hear from the Cone Partnership and also Cordy Company.
Dan Bean from CMA Consulting. Is there any secret to success when it comes to a family business?
There's no secrets and there's no right things to do for every family business. The family business has to do what fits that family and the individual members of that family at the current generation and at the next generation, and also what will work inside the business. There aren't things that every family business ought to do and every family business should not do. So this is a learn the business, learn the family, learn the culture, figure out what will work and will move that family forward at that particular moment in time.
You can find this episode and some of the previous stories by going to KMOX.com. In the podcast section, look for Business of Family Business. Liza Cholet with the Cone Partnership talks about her parents being supportive, kind of.
Were your parents very supportive of you, or did they try to encourage you to do something else?
One of each. My mom tried to dissuade me from law school, and my dad was excited to study with me. So,
okay.
I thought he was crazy.
So why did your mom not want you to go into law school?
My impression was that my mom had picked law without really knowing why and didn't really love it. And so she just thought there's much more fun things to do with your life than practice law. Whereas my dad, I think, has loved every minute of it. And like I said, he was excited to study for law school exams with me again. I mean, I don't think most people feel that way about
and you have practicing two, law. You have two sisters.
I have two sisters.
And what do they do?
So I'm in the middle. Mm-hmm. My older sister is a real estate agent and has her own brokerage. Mm-hmm. And then my younger sister is in California in fashion design. So neither one of them went the legal route, although they both would have been great attorneys, but sitting through law school would have been a challenge for at least one of them. So,
my mother-in-law says, we Irish never let the truth get in the way of a good argument.
Is that right? Yeah. Well, when Liza showed interest and she wanted to get into law, she says you were encouraging. What did you think on your end? Were you excited that one of your daughters wanted to follow in your footsteps?
I was more than excited. Yeah. I was over the moon.
Mm-hmm.
And Liza was probably my best student among the three of them. And I always loved the law. I loved everything about the law. I've taught law. I've taught in the CPA review course. I read novels. I've always been fascinated by the law. And knowing that Liza was eventually going to come and practice with us, it's great. Now, I didn't anticipate she'd be this good this fast.
Thank you.
Thanks to Liza Cholet from Cone Partnership. Also encouraging the kids to get in, Ralph from Cordy Company and his son Todd about what he had to do first with Cordy Company.
And right out of college, went to work for another firm, White's Company, out of Des Moines, Iowa. Mm-hmm. Moved around with them for 5 years all over. I was in Des Moines, Connecticut, Maryland, and Nebraska. And then in 1994, I got a phone call from Ralph that Vern Eardley, he was the CEO of Cordy Construction, had won the Illinois lottery for $41 million, I believe.
What?
And had expressed an interest to Ralph, or suggested to Ralph, that if one of your kids is interested in coming back and taking over, I'm going to be here a while because I've got young kids. Vern has young kids that he wanted to make sure that they saw Dad going to work and contributing to society, if you will. So I took the offer in 1994 and came back and started working back in the company in project management, marketing, pre-construction, kind of under the tutelage, if you will, of Vern. And then in 1999 was named president, and then Vern retired in 2000 and I took over the title of CEO.
Hit the lottery, one of your business associates?
Yes.
Hits the lottery.
Yes.
Did you believe him when he told you?
He said he had came into some money. He said he had to talk to me that morning. And
Sunday morning, right?
It was Monday morning. They had won the lottery on Saturday. And he said, I need to talk to you. And came in my office there at Union Station. And I chatted a little bit about the weather. And he had his wife with him. And that was different because she didn't work for the company. This was 9 o'clock in the morning. And he said, well, we came into some money over the weekend. And I said, he said, well, I won the lottery. And I didn't know anything about the lottery. I still haven't bought a ticket. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, how much? Because I knew there was multiple winners. And he said, $41 million. I reached across the table and said, I was going to congratulate him. Thought they were coming in to say, I'm out of here.
Yeah.
And he says, I wanted to tell you that I want to keep working because I got these two young boys. And he stayed on, and it was a great transition, just perfect. I had made a deal with my kids, and if I jump into that, I belong to YPO, Young Presidents Organization, and they are mostly family businesses, and went to many seminars. Mm-hmm. And I had made up my mind that through some of the seminars, Leon Danko, he wrote books about this, that have your children go away first. Mm-hmm. Have them get a college degree. Then have them go away and work for somebody else mm-hmm. for a minimum of 5 years, and then they can come back if they want to. Mm-hmm. So I told my kids what the ground rules were going to be, but that I would pick one and only one that would be the boss. And if they didn't want to get in that kind of a horse race, they shouldn't come back to work for the company. It's worked out beautifully.
Thanks to Ralph and Todd Cordy from the Cordy Company joining us in studio. Talking about those early years is Gary and Laura Setley from Setley Jewelers, and Gary's father, Gustav Setley Sr., back in 1946.
Well, actually, my father started Setley Jewelers in 1946.
46, yes. What was that like in 1946?
Well, gosh, of course, I wasn't there.
Yeah.
In 1946, he's actually stationed in Atlanta, Georgia, or just outside Atlanta, mm-hmm. Georgia, in a munitions plant. And when the war ended, he started to work for a watchmaker who was a relative, one of the sons of my dad's, or my dad rented a room in a house. Mm-hmm. And
so by coincidence, almost.
Almost by coincidence, that's correct. And he started in with this watchmaker and started learning the jewelry business. And at that time, it was a jewelry trade business.
Your dad had no interest in it up until that point.
Well, before the war, before he went into the munitions plant while he was in the Army, he was born and raised in St. Louis, and he worked for Emerson Electric studying to be a tool and die maker. So,
okay.
He actually, I remember him telling me a story one day where he would park about two blocks north of the old Sticks, Baron, Fuller. And in the wintertime, he'd walk through Sticks, Baron, Fuller to stay warm, cross the street, walk through Famous Bar to stay warm, cross the street, and another block was Chestnut, and walked into the Holland Building and went up to the ninth floor and did his work. So one day he would stop in Famous Bar and he said, hey, look, give me your sizing, give me your setting, and give me your repair work in the morning, and I'll drop it off on the way home at night.
Wow.
And so that was the first taste of customer service, I guess, that Setley Jewelers offered.
Thanks to Gary and Laura Setley from Setley Jewelers for telling that story of the early part of their business. With Dan Bean from CMA Consulting, who presents this program. It's the business of family business. In the next segment, we're going to hear stories from Lodging Hospitality Management and also Schaefer Marketing Group. I'm your host, Ryan Recker. In many ways, family businesses are like any other business. In many other ways, obviously, they're not. And I want you to imagine what it's like when a family business owner is ready to make that decision to transition. What does he do next? Has he developed the next owner to be effective? Have they thought about transfer? What about the leadership side? Who is that right person? CMA Consulting leads a multidisciplinary team to help family businesses unify the next generation and develop them to be effective business owners. And then you have to align the current and next generation. It's not as simple as just handing over the keys. CMAConsult.com is the website. You can contact CMA for a complimentary, no-obligation meeting to discuss your family business, perhaps an upcoming generational transition, or even the benefits of one of their programs. Go to CMAConsult.com or call 314-721-1860 to see if this program is right for you and your family business. CMAConsult.com. If you know a family business that would fit on this program and has a great story to tell, we would love to hear from you. Go to cmaconsult.com and reach out to Dan Bean. Let them know that you have a family business in mind, or perhaps you are a family business. Just go to cmaconsult.com. In the business of family business, we like to tell those stories of family businesses. And this weekend, looking at the past year and sharing some of those stories of the early years in business, some of those relationships that they made with the next generations, or perhaps even maybe a little secret to success. I'm your host, Ryan Recker.
Dan Bean from CMA Consulting. Do you find that if you have a close relationship between the generations, it's easier or harder to make decisions?
So sometimes executives, whether from the same generation or across generations from a family business or a non-family business, sometimes being on the same page and always agreeing is not a good thing. Sometimes disagreement spawns new ideas, new concepts, ideas that would not be stated or discovered if it weren't for some differences of opinions. So it is important at times for business owners and family members to disagree to have a more substantive conversation. On the other hand, really major things, foundational things like our values and what we're all about and who we are as a family, it's okay to discuss those things, but they should line up very tightly around those key components. So it depends on what we're talking about. Some things there should not be a lot of difference. Other things, differences of opinion can have great benefit.
This segment we hear from Schaefer Marketing Group and also Lodging Hospitality Management. First, adapting to the market changes with Mike Schaefer and his daughter, Chris Steger, from Schaefer Marketing Group.
One thing that your daughter, Chris, mentioned there was that she would remember growing up, there would be times where things were a little more difficult. Maybe you were talking about different contracts or a little bit harder times in the company. What were some of those challenges? Let's say, 1976, but let's say in the 1980s, were there any challenges you guys faced?
The greatest challenge for a rep is when you get a line, you build it up, and you build it up to a point where it now makes sense for the manufacturer to hire a direct employee. That's a major risk that all of us reps have. You can actually work yourself out of a job.
Wow.
Where the manufacturer then decides to, you know, hire a direct person or whatever to do your job, and the idea being that he can save money doing that.
Mm-hmm.
So then that actually happened to us in, I think it was 82 or 3.
Mm-hmm.
We lost a major wire line that basically we'd started out from little or nothing.
Was that a surprise at the time?
It was. It was a complete surprise.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the risk of being in the rep business. It's the greatest risk that companies sometimes will let you go for no reason that you can understand. We've been through two particularly hard times. One was 1982. That's when, you know, the interest rates were 21.5%. And that's when we lost that wire line, by the way. That was part of their problem at that time. And so We talked about what we did for that. But the more recent one was 2007, 2008, when home building came almost to a complete halt in this marketplace. And the economy came to a screeching halt, and the rest we all know about. But what we did at that time is we kind of reorganized our focus to more into energy-saving products, LED lighting, LED retrofits, and so forth. And that's become today, we became an Ameren ally, a trade ally. We've received a number of honors for that over the last several years. And that's become a major part of our business today, LED lighting.
It's smart.
We've participated in that along with Ameren, but their incentive programs make it really smart for anybody, especially businesses, to convert over perfectly good lighting and either retrofit it or replace it. I noticed in your garage out as I walked in, all those fixtures out there have been replaced recently with LED. And so those are the type of projects that we get involved in all over Missouri and Illinois, with cooperating with Ameren's rebate program. And that's become a very important part of our business. So that was a major transition that we had to make. And as a result of that, during the last recession, started 2008, we never laid anybody off. And the team kept growing, and we've been very fortunate in that way.
Thanks to Mike Schaefer and his daughter, Chris Steger, from Schaefer Marketing Group. One more story to tell in this best of episode of the Business of Family Business. Bob and Steve O'Loughlin from Lodging Hospitality Management about moving fast and how that relationship works to move fast.
Generally, Steve and I agree with everything, and it's been a lot of fun. It's I don't know if Steve would say the same thing, but it's been fun for me.
Yeah, it's been, I think it's been a ton of fun. And I think something that is, I guess, unique to our setup and our company is how quickly we can move on things. So if my dad's looking at an opportunity, it's not like he's going to a board or investors or asking, you know, for permission. If he wants to buy Union Station, he will make that decision and off we go. I was talking to somebody last week that works with us, and he said, I just love working with your company because if I need an answer or permission to do something with you guys, it's you and Bob. And, you know, things just happen so much quicker. And I think that's also something that I don't know if it surprised me, but when I was with Marriott, everything is so bureaucratic and things are slow. So if we need to renovate something or if you have an idea, it generally would get lost or it just doesn't happen. But, you know, tell the story about the 360 rooftop bar. We took my mom up to Chicago for her birthday, and we fly up and we see this rooftop bar up there. We have a nice dinner at Gibson's, and then we pop over to this bar that just opened up. And on the way back, my dad said, you know, we got to do a rooftop bar at the Hilton at the ballpark. And so, you know, we get home, and literally on Monday, I'm calling the designer and he's flying down, and probably within 6 weeks, you know, we're signing a contract to do a rooftop bar. And this is in the middle of the recession. And, you know, we did this all out of cash. And that's how quickly, you know, we can act on things and off we go.
You said it's ranked one of the top in the world.
Yeah. So it pops up, you know, you'll see these Thrillist things. Yeah. And, it's exciting every time you see those things come up on social media. I'll click through to see if we're listed. And, you know, sure enough, we are. And it's exciting for us and it's exciting for the staff.
Yeah.
Thanks to Bob and Steve O'Loughlin from Lodging Hospitality Management sharing their story this weekend on the Business of Family Business. And all of the individual stories you heard, you can listen to them in full by going to KMOX.com. In the podcast section, we have each individual story shared there from the past, year and a half, 2 years of doing this radio program, The Business of Family Business. Thank you for listening to us. I'm your host, Ryan Recker. We'll see you again next time.